I was going to ask you as well, what's your website links, your Twitter and stuff for people to get to see what you're up to?
I don't have a website, unfortunately. I've not got motivated or organised or mobilised to get that ever. But I've got a Twitter thing, but I don't often tweet. In fact, I've never tweeted. I just use it to follow football stories and stuff like that. So I'm a pretty invisible guy, other than just when you can see that I'm appearing somewhere.
Do you have a Facebook page, maybe?
I do, but it's not. I don't list any gigs or anything like that on it. I'm completely useless.
You just don't want to be famous, do you? That's it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm just trying to hide. That's all it is. I'm from another planet. I mean, you get a lot of it, certainly from doing a show. You get so many people's opinions and so many different websites with their reviews, and we live in a very kind of self-opinion driven world now, where everyone seems to think that they've got something worth hearing, and they've got the means to let everybody hear about it as well. So I don't mind it. I think it causes entertainment, but it also causes drama as well, which is never a dull thing. I think never a bad. A few people that use Twitter exceptionally well, and I'm for various different reasons, for political reasons, for social reasons, sport reasons, and things like that. And you've got someone like Howard Stern over in America, who's just, he's a natural at it. And he kind of uses it in this very, very interesting way as well. He tweets pictures and he tweets, you know, gossip and news and adverts for stuff as well. But also he does something fantastic. Like on New Year's Eve, he tweeted out, he was sat with his wife and he tweeted out to his fans, send me your number and I'll phone you and we'll have a chat on New Year's Eve. And I just thought that was a fantastic way to use the medium. Really, and you know, very, very interesting. So I find it fascinating, and I have been roped into it. I was very kind of poo-pooing it and against it when I first heard about it and couldn't see the use. But in actual fact, I'm just as peeping Tom-like as anyone else. I like to know what people are thinking. I just don't like anyone to know what I'm thinking.
I like that element of kind of like celebrities and pop stars and stuff ringing people, because I remember seeing this brilliant, I think it was on the documentary Synth Britannia, and it had Depeche Mode on,
right.
And David Gahan was talking on, I think, and Gary Newman as well was talking on, it was, I think, something like Going Live or something like that. And they just had people just ringing them up saying, who does your hair? You know, that's what it would be like on Twitter if someone said, like, you know, someone said, where do you get your tan from? You know, that's what it would be like.
No, it's amazing how, I mean, to sound really old and farty, like, it is amazing how everything like this, the social media has evolved over the last 10 years. In that you can actually, like, I could send Stan Collymore, Howard Stern, you know, Prince William a message, you know, and it might not be them that reads it, it might not be them that replies back, but the access has just got so much more immediate and so much more intense, really. And I think that's probably what generates the reaction and the bile. I think, you know, it used to be like you could just leave a comment on a review or a comment on a clip, and you'd have a pseudonym and whatever, and no one could ever really find you unless they were good at working out how servers can be traced and things like that. But now, I mean, like, when Colin Moore just retweets the Twitter thing, it's they've got the police knocking on the door, like, in the next couple of days, and these guys are in court. So it's kind of like a technological Ironside he's doing there. He's just, like, taking everyone down one by one.
It was like that in the summer, wasn't it, with the riots and stuff, you know, when people were kind of tweeting about, oh, there's going to be a riot here and stuff like that, and people inciting things, and then they obviously, they get done for it and all that, but it was weird because they were trying to kind of make it more kind of, oh, there's a riot starting in Newcastle, and there wasn't, you know, and it was just people just going, oh, they're stealing clothes from, they're not, you know, that place is closed. So
you can certainly tweet Wolf. You can absolutely do that. I think you can really kind of like set things up. But I mean, I like the idea that you can just do something. You know, you can put a joke out on Twitter and you can be heckled for it in Egypt, or you can be heckled for it, in, you know, in Malaysia or something like that. I mean, it's it is fascinating, the immediacy of it right now, but it's not something that I'm particularly keen to dip my toes in right now. I think I like to do my stuff, and I like to come home, and I have a very different kind of mindset off stage as I do on stage, and I need time away just to kind of handle all those demons I get out on stage and brew up some new ones at home on my own in private.
So how, obviously you're not a young whippersnapper, you know, you're not one of these kind of teen comics and stuff like that. So how did you make it into the world of comedy then?
It was probably by a backwards route, really. I started out as an actor, and I was, when I graduated Manchester University, I had an agent up there, and I did loads of acting work up there, and I just found like I didn't have any connection really to a lot of the stuff I was doing. It didn't really feel like it was using any of the skills that I thought I was good at. And so I started writing parts for myself. So I'd write plays, I'd write sketches and things like that, and have parts in their comedy predominantly for me to play. And that just led into a real idea of writing plays properly and putting them on. I did them in Manchester for a while, and then I moved down to London and did years and years of just continuous writing, just churning out crap after crap after crap and putting it on. That was the crucial thing, that I put it on so that I got a reaction immediately, and I got a sense of development immediately on stage and off for the writing and the performance, and did all right with it. Like, I got good reviews, I got good houses, and had a fairly decent reputation in terms of the work that was coming out, but career-wise it wasn't really moving so fast, and a lot of work that I'd be putting into plays, it would take months to write, rehearse, cast, and fund. I mean, I had to pay for everything myself. I couldn't pay the actors, unfortunately, but I had to pay for all the production and the promotion myself, and I'd maybe just get a review out of it. I might not get an agent, I might not get a meeting or a job offer straight away, and that was really taking its toll, because I did that for probably about 7 or 8 years of just constant performance and production with no end product, really. So I just changed tack. I took a lot of the comedy characters out of the place, put them in on open mic nights, scratch nights, new material nights, and just did 5 minutes of material with these characters that I'd already played and already fleshed out, so they were quite realised and did well, and you know, in all honesty, in the 5 or 6 years I've been doing that, I moved 10 times faster than I was in the previous 8 years doing plays.
So where's the your favourite venue then that you've played up to now then?
I don't know. Like, I really loved, I suppose it would have to be the Pleasance in Edinburgh. The upstairs where I was this year is a relatively small venue. It's got like 115 people in it. Very, very compact, on three sides of you, which is perfect for character comedy and audience interaction, which is a lot of the stuff that I did this year in particular. So that was a perfect room, and a perfect room to write for, because I wrote it very site specific for the show this year. But down in London, I loved the Lowdown at the Albany, which is a bar that's now shut. I developed a ton of work there over the years, and the Canal Cafe as well, in Little Venice. Again, I was there when I first moved down to London, and I just maybe spent 3 or 4 years just writing there. So they're venues that have got a lot of good memories. Not a lot of success, but a lot of good memories in terms of doing stuff. I don't do a lot of touring. I don't do a lot of gigging, really. I've kind of stopped that. I didn't really feel the benefit personally for me in doing endless nights of new slots here and there on different clubs. It didn't really suit what I wanted to get from the tryout, and also what I wanted to get from the material. So I don't really gig that much, if at all, really.
So if you had a cameo, these are sort of make-believe sort of questions.
Right,
so
okay, we've changed tack completely.
Oh, yeah, you know, in the editing, they'll be like, what? How's he got from that? Yeah. A cameo in any sitcom, which sitcom would it be?
What, British or American?
It could be Indonesian, you know, whatever.
Now you're talking my language. That's my, and from the past or present, or
from 1941 until 2000.
Fantastic. So it's a real broad sweep of a question,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Cheers. I would love to be in Cheers. That was my favourite sitcom. I would love to have been in that in any kind of capacity. Blackadder, just because you know that if you were on that, because of the size of the cast, it was quite small and they were regular. If you knew you were on that, then you knew you were up there with some of the best people in the business at that time. What else do I like? The American stuff, I love Arrested Development, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Parks and Recreation, Modern Family, all of that stuff. But if I could have a part on anything, it would be Saturday Night Live. That would be the dream for me. I just came back from doing a few shows out there. I did one in New York and then I did a couple in LA, and they were like showcase type industry gigs. And then I did the full show from Edinburgh. But whilst we were there, we got to see a fair few shows and saw a lot of the guys that were doing stuff out there. And what was really interesting was the fact that a lot of their stuff obviously comes from the improvised backgrounds and all their kind of schools and their training and stuff. And these guys are churning out like a different hour of material every night just for the hell of it. They're not doing it. They're not perfecting an hour to go to Edinburgh. They're not perfecting 20 minutes to do the club circuit. They're just doing an hour right there, right then, off the top of their heads with, you know, six other like-minded people in a team and creating long-form stuff that really you could film and you could bung on, and it would be better than anything we've got going on over here. And that was a real eye-opener, because you spend so long over here working towards your 1 hour for your one opportunity, possibly. Whereas these guys, they may be churning out 5 or 6 good hours a month of stuff that you could fashion together and run every night. And that was very inspiring, mildly intimidating as well, but very inspiring. Like there's a real sharp wit over there, but a relaxed wit that they're doing it for the joy of it, as opposed to for the business of it. And that was extremely refreshing to be around.
So who would you like to collaborate with then comics wise? Who, just anyone, if you know, no matter how big or small they are?
What, to do something for TV or something like that?
You could just do a bit of writing with them, or you could do a bit of performance with them. Or...
I like, I've worked a little bit with Nick Mohammed and Colin Holt. We did some shot, they're character comedians as well down here. And we did a couple of live shows at the beginning of last year, where we sort of dovetailed in each other's sketches a little bit. It's hard to kind of throw stuff together when you've got solo acts, because everyone is obviously thinking about their own career and their own work. And like I say, everyone was, at that time when we were working, the three of us, Colin and I were working towards Edinburgh, and Nick was working on TV stuff and radio stuff. So it's very hard for us to sit down and just write and perform stuff just for the hell of working together. But I think it's a great shame that we don't, and that we can't, and that there isn't possibly an environment on TV where we can just do that, because I think there's greater strength in numbers, really. I think the three of us would be far stronger together than we would be individually, and really kind of bend and learn from each other in terms of what each other can do and what each other can bring to create really, really good, interesting work that the three of us would never be able to come up with on our own. So I was really keen for that to kind of push on. But it's one of those things, like I say, it's very, very tough. Humphrey Kerr is the same, who won the Newcomer Award this year. He and I, you know, we've become friendly over the last year or so. And we would love to work on stuff together. But it's very difficult to get yourself down and sat at the table and thinking honestly and professionally about something that takes you away from your own path. But in terms of people that are out there, you know, I just want to work with the best. You want to get your writing and your performing higher and to a stronger standard. And that to do that, you need to work with great producers, great directors and great actors. And there are great, you know, great talents over here that are tricky to kind of get in the door with. But winning an award sort of opens up a few doors, but it doesn't necessarily get you in that room for that long.
Yeah,
still need to keep going. You still need to keep writing and just proving that you weren't just a flash in the pan, really.
Final question, the big one. You're on Come Down With Me. and which four comics would you have around your house for tea?
Oh, God. Peter Cook, I would have. Gary Shandling, I would have. Will Ferrell. And how many more? I've got one more.
Yes.
Steve Coogan, but sat on Rowan Atkinson's lap. Yeah, it's tough when you kind of bring it down that far. Jack Lemmon. We'd be round Jack Lemmon's house as well.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so he's not at the table, but he's kindly let us in there.
He's a little bit annoyed that you're round his house. And
he is. He's a bit fed up, but he's letting us do it anyway, and we're rude enough to just take advantage of that and ignore his feelings. So yeah, I would go with them.
Well, thanks for your time, Ian. I wish you well, and I hope.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Ian. Yeah, it was lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, and you take care and have a good day, and I'll see you soon. All right, take care.
Thanks.
Bye.